Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features contributions from Chico State Orion, Chico Soul, and the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Oroville Fire Service recovery by Hope Brianna Campbell, a segment on Chico Public Works by David Foose, a report on the Chico City Council meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell, and news releases by David Foose.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. In Oroville, city officials are considering a new approach to address the growing demand on local fire services. A proposed cost recovery ordinance aimed at reducing misuse of emergency resources. Fire officials say the department is facing a heavy workload, responding to thousands of calls each year. A large portion of those calls are not traditional fires, but medical or non-emergency situations. In fact, recent reports show the department handled more than 6,600 calls, including over 4,000 medical responses alone. That increasing demand is at the center of the proposal. The idea behind cost recovery is simple. When fire crews are repeatedly called out for non-emergency or preventable situations, the city could seek reimbursement for those services. This would primarily target cases where individuals or businesses are found to be neglecting responsibilities, misusing the system, or repeatedly triggering unnecessary responses. Fire leadership argues that these types of calls can pull crews away from real emergencies. Structure fires, rescues, and life-threatening incidents where every second counts. By introducing a cost recovery system, the city hopes to discourage misuse while ensuring resources remain available for critical situations. Supporters of the proposal say it could also help offset the financial strain on the department. Fire services are expensive to operate, requiring staffing, equipment, and ongoing training. When crews respond to avoidable incidents, those costs add up quickly. A cost recovery model would shift some of that burden away from taxpayers and onto those responsible for repeated or neglected use. However, the proposal is not without concerns. Some community members worry about fairness, particularly when it comes to medical calls or situations where people may not fully understand when to call for help. There's also the question of how the policy would be enforced and what qualifies as neglect versus a legitimate emergency. City staff are expected to continue refining the ordinance, including defining clear guidelines for when charges would apply and how fees would be structured. The goal is to strike a balance, maintaining access to emergency services while reducing unnecessary strain on the system. Oroville's discussion reflects a trend seen in other communities across California and the country, where fire departments are adapting to rising call volumes and shifting responsibilities. More than ever, departments are serving as first responders for a wide range of incidents, not just fires. For now, the proposal is still under review, but it signals a shift in how local governments may handle emergency service demand moving forward, focusing not just on response, but also on accountability and sustainability. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. The City of Chico Public Works Engineering Department announced the start of the 2026 construction season, during which $29 million from various sources will be invested in about a dozen infrastructure projects to improve safety, connectivity, and quality of life in Chico. Here's a summary of the projects. The Pomona Avenue Bridge Replacement Project will replace the structurally deficient and functionally obsolete Pomona Avenue Bridge over Little Chico Creek with a modern, safer structure. The Fair Street Rehabilitation Project includes roadway rehabilitation and construction to address deteriorating pavement conditions while enhancing safety and accessibility. The East 20th Street Project will improve the eastern section of East 20th Street from the on-off ramps at State Route 99 north to Notre Dame Boulevard. The Ceanothus Avenue Project involves full depth reclamation of the avenue from Manzanita Avenue to East Avenue and includes a designated northbound right turn lane into Pleasant Valley High School. The Pavement Preservation Project will apply a slurry seal to extend pavement life and improve road surface quality in the Forest Avenue Springfield Drive area. The Park Avenue Beautification Project will reconstruct the existing multi-use path adjacent to Park Avenue from East 20th Street to East Park Avenue. The Eaton Road and Floral Avenue Roundabout Project will add a new roundabout at that intersection. The North Cedar Street Improvements Project includes roadway rehabilitation, drainage improvements, and the installation of curb, gutter, and sidewalks along North Cedar Street from West 4th Avenue south to West Sacramento Avenue. The South Park Drive Rehabilitation Project will reconstruct South Park Drive within Lower Bidwell Park from Cypress Street to Centennial Avenue, similar to the work recently completed on the north side of the creek. State Route 32 and Bruce Road Signal Enhancements Project will upgrade traffic signals and turn lane configurations at that intersection. The Citywide Pedestrian Enhancements Project will add leading pedestrian interval, audible pedestrian system hardware, upgraded signal hardware, and intelligent transportation systems equipment to 22 intersections, prioritizing those near schools. And finally, the Vallambrosa Way Pedestrian and Bicycle Safety Project will install an additional pedestrian and bicycle crossing at two intersections, Vallambrosa Avenue and Memorial Way, and Memorial Way and Camellia Way. This has been David Foose for Zephyr News.
This is Sunny for Chico Soul. This week, stalemate at Chico City Council over plans for the revitalization of downtown, statewide election news, and voter registration information for the District 1 special election and the June primary election. In local news, Chris Hutton reported that Alternative One failed to win approval from Chico City Council on April 21st, leading to a second stalemate after April 7th over downtown revitalization. Alternative One is one of three proposals for the downtown redesign and was recommended after being favored by most survey participants. Alternative One would place protected one-way bikeways on Main Street and Broadway and widened sidewalks. Downtown would lose one parking space, and Main Street and Broadway would go from three lanes to two. The project would be eligible for significant subsidy through the Active Transportation Grant and would be completed by 2030. Public comment drew the second highest turnout of any city council session ever. The meeting lasted 4 hours. 76 people signed up to speak, and some members of the public were asked to listen from the overflow room. 69 spoke at the podium, with about two-thirds in favor of Alternative One. But the council vote deadlocked, 3-3. Here's Mayor Casey Reynolds closing City Council on April 21st.
Well, we're at 10:20. And we don't have another motion of something else, so I don't know how to move forward.
Vote again?
Yeah, can we vote again on this?
Come on, please. Come on, Casey. Please. Casey, come on. Vote again.
I feel one is the object dialogue behind the voice of the community.
Recuse yourself the way you should have.
So they're supposed to be voting for their community constituents, not for themselves.
We're done for tonight.
Without a clear way forward, the city now faces a tight deadline for the active transportation grant due June 22nd, which would have helped to fund a majority of the project outlined in specifically Alternative 1. In statewide election news, CalMatters reported that 7 major candidates are splitting the vote in the Democratic primary for governor. With less than 3 weeks before ballots are sent to delegates, top Democrats like Governor Gavin Newsom and former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi are reluctant to endorse a candidate, making this California's first truly open Democratic primary in 16 years. The 2026 race is also only the second time an open field has competed under the top 2 primary system, which could result in 2 Democrats or 2 Republicans advancing to the general election, excluding the other party from the ballot. Grassroots activists have decried the influence of party insiders for decades, but the scenario of an abundance of candidates and no clear frontrunner has proved unappealing too. The resulting decision paralysis has resurrected calls for a strong leader to step in. In local election news, Linda Joy Fenley and Leslie Layton published voter registration information in both English and Spanish to chicosol.org. May 18th is the deadline to register ahead of the District 1 special election and the June primary election. The Butte Republican Party posted a plea for voters to register and vote in both elections on its Facebook page and website. The recording secretary for the Butte Democratic Party told Chico Sol that North State residents who favor the Democratic Party need to turn out in strong numbers to ensure a viable candidate advances to the November election. Again, the deadline to register is May 18th. In Butte, Glenn, and Tehama counties, would-be voters or voters who want to update their registration can visit their local elections office or, in some cases, register online. ChicoSol.org provides all the details in English and Spanish, including links, addresses, and telephone numbers for registering in Butte, Glenn, and Tehama counties. This has been Sunny for Chico Sol. Follow the latest at chicosol.org, including a video by Chris Hutton of April 21st City Council meeting in Chico, and our community calendar, which provides details for upcoming Butte County Board of Supervisors meetings and Chico City Council. At chicosol.org, you can also subscribe to our free weekly newsletter, The Little Sun, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers. That's chicosol.org.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. The Chico City Council is taking a closer look at how commercial cannabis is regulated within city limits. Agenda item 4.2, brought forward by council member Holly, calls for a review and potentially tighter oversight of the city's cannabis industry. Councilmember Holly's request signals concerns about gaps in the existing framework, whether related to zoning, enforcement, or community impacts. Supporters of revisiting the regulations say it's a chance to ensure that cannabis businesses operate responsibly, align with neighborhood expectations, and contribute positively to the local economy. Councilmember Holly states at the Chico City Council meeting,
"My review is pretty thorough. I don't want to take too much time to dig into it, and I kind of want to let the rest of the council pick out items as they arise as concerns. But when conducting meetings, not only with staff, but also the greater community and people who are interested in the industry and active in the industry, one of the really easy wins that consistently came up was commercial cultivation permitting. There are pretty significant differences between indoor and outdoor cultivation. So to me, that's where the bulk of the discussion lies. But you'll see that my motion was considering changes in commercial cannabis legislation. So that's what the discussion is open to. My council member write-up is really just focusing on cultivation because I feel that was coming through as a consensus building item.
This doesn't necessarily mean immediate changes, but it opens the door to a broader policy conversation, one that could shape how cannabis businesses function in Chico moving forward. For residents, the issue touches on a range of concerns, from public safety and neighborhood character to economic development and tax revenue. For business owners, it raises questions about stability, predictability, and the cost of compliance. Decisions like this reflect a broader effort by the Chico City Council to revisit existing policies and respond to community feedback, whether that results in stricter regulations, clearer guidelines, or a reaffirmation of current rules remains to be seen. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
You are listening to the Orion News Weekly Report, brought to you by California State University Chico, KZFR, KCSE, and KWQA Maker Radio. The reporters and editors of the Orion work tirelessly to bring you relevant, timely, and engaging news, sports, opinion, and entertainment.
The university flag was lowered Thursday on campus to honor the passing of former Chico State President Paul Zing. He passed away on April 9th at the age of 80. Zing served as president from 2004 to 2016. Before becoming president of Chico State, he earned his PhD in history from the University of Georgia, Athens. Zing published 10 books and nearly 100 articles on American higher education, student learning, educational leadership, sports history, and intercollegiate athletics. Zing is remembered for his investment in campus life and the university's sustainability initiatives. Throughout his tenure, he displayed a commitment to sustainability and inclusivity by establishing programs to support students and help the university adapt to its changing demographics. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and throughout campus, there will be donation bins for sexual assault response bags. An Honors 393 class project is gathering donations. The aim is to spread awareness and make waiting for sexual assault survivors more comfortable during a forensic exam. The bags, quote, will be provided to survivors of sexual assault with items like non-perishable foods, toothpaste, throw blankets, etc., said Alana Jacobs, one of the six students working on the project. The white bins have scannable flyers with more information and can be found in various locations around campus. Yolo Hall, the Wildcat Recreation Center, Student Learning Center Room 340, Bell Memorial Union, and the Acker Gym. Residents in Oroville, where some flyers can be found, can even help out. Each flyer contains a barcode that links to an Amazon wish list. Even if people can't donate, Jacobs hopes when people see the flyer on the bin, it'll create interest in Catalyst services, especially for those who may be survivors of sexual assault.
University Police Department arrested the Associated Students Concession Supervisor, Gannon Rodriguez, last Wednesday night on suspicion of driving an AS Dining Services car under the influence. Lieutenant Bryce Davison with UPD said that while people were in the area, there weren't any reported injuries and light scratches were found on the cart. Davison said officers observed Rodriguez recklessly driving a golf cart around campus before pulling him over near Glenn Hall. According to a log entry from UPD's media bulletin, a person passing by told officers at 8:18 p.m. that they saw a cart hit a sign near Glenn Hall. UPD arrested Rodriguez, who was taken to Butte County Jail. UPD is still investigating the incident. More information will be available following the investigation. The Associated Students Government Affairs Committee had its second-to-last meeting. The committee passed the activity fee budget, 400. According to Beatrix Teeny, Executive Vice President and Chair of GAC, this yearly budget organizes how student fees are distributed across AS programs, salaries, and student government. The committee also approved one-time allocations from AS reserves set aside by last year's team to four organizations. Those four organizations were Gender and Sexuality Equity Coalition, Cross-Cultural Leadership Center, WellCat Counseling Center, and Internation Education and Global Education. Its final meeting will take place Friday at 3 p.m., where the committee will vote on a resolution calling for more waste education and signage to improve recycling. The resolution was passed in the AS Sustainability Committee and was brought to GAC by Sustainability Commissioner Sarah Larum as a discussion item. These stories and much more can be found at theorion.com. This week's authors include Chris Hutton and Caden Huntley. Today's episode was narrated by Hannah Cabral. This has been your boy Cody Rowan, signing off.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. California Governor Gavin Newsom proclaimed April as Arab American Heritage Month, also Autism Acceptance Month, and this week as California Library Week. In celebration of Earth Day, Governor Newsom and first partner Siebel Newsom announced a plan called State Parks Forward to create three new state parks in California's Central Valley. Northern California gets one of the three. That would be Feather River Park, to be located on the east bank of the Feather River west of Olivehurst in Yuba County. The park site sits on about 2,000 acres along the Feather River and includes a floodplain to take on water in high flow years and has natural habitat in restored areas. The park will also feature riverfront trails, a boat launch, and a riverside beach. Feather River Park would be the first state park in Yuba County. Butte County celebrated Earth Day by launching a new informational website, ourwatertheirpower.org, to advocate for Oroville Dam and the county. To give you the flavor, here are some quotes from the website. Rome had aqueducts, Manhattan has the Erie Canal, and California, arguably the most audacious economic experiment in human history, has the Oroville Dam. The county is Butte, the river is the Feather, and what happened is a masterclass in how a society can simultaneously be magnificent and cruel. While the water from Lake Oroville facilitates a trillion-dollar economy, Butte County, the host of Lake Oroville, incurs an annual loss of $20 million due to dam-related impacts. And finally, if you're interested in visiting the goats who are munching their way through Lower Park, at sunset last night, they were on the south side of the creek in the vicinity of Cedar Grove. This is David Foose for Zephyr News.
From KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Alex Hall in for Madi Bolaños.
Now, normally county clerk races don't get that much attention, but in Shasta County, two candidates are fighting for the future of elections in a place that's garnered national attention for years now. Jefferson Public Radio's Roman Battaglia headed to Reading to learn more about this pivotal race.
Former Assistant County Clerk Joanna Franciscat is facing her old boss and the appointed county clerk, Clint Curtis. He was selected to lead the office in a controversial decision by county supervisors last year. Curtis came from Florida and never ran an election prior to his appointment. He was selected because of his vision to radically change the way elections are conducted in the county.
The elections have basically been given to bureaucrats. They run them, they block observation, they do whatever they pretty much want to and tell you to go away. You know, don't look here, we got it under control. And so we're changing all that.
Now, Curtis is that bureaucrat, and he wants to introduce his vision of transparency to Shasta County. That includes setting up cameras to film everything.
As far as observing, they can observe everything. And candidates can count their own. And if they find an error, they can tell us about that. And, you know, we can get it, go down there and drill down and find if it's correct.
Although in reality, the camera system needs some tweaks. The resolution is so poor, it's almost impossible to see what's on the ballot. That's something Curtis says he wants to fix. Franciscat, his opponent, brings with her 17 years of experience with elections. Franciscat says that Curtis has been able to improve transparency and observation because she had already been working on that before he took over.
We weren't able to implement any new video cameras because we didn't have the appropriate space on the server. And so we had just purchased a new server right before I got fired that would allow for more video cameras and more streaming and that type of work to have happen.
Franciscat was passed over by county supervisors twice during recent appointments to fill the clerk seat. The first time in 2024, when the longtime clerk Kathy Darling Allen stepped down for health reasons. Franciscat worked well with the replacement, Tom Toller, but then he too stepped down last year, and the far-right majority on the Board of Supervisors chose Curtis over Franciscat.
I was following the direction of the county clerks at that time and implementing their goals, implementing their process, implementing their priorities. I never once got a chance to step up and implement my priorities.
Franciscat says one of her priorities would be moving out of their current office on Market Street.
Where we count ballots, it's tough to manage, it's tough to make things observable and having that balance between secure elections and transparent elections.
A new building is something both Franciscat and Curtis agree on.
I need to get a new building. If I had a new building, we could do our own printing in-house. Because one of my concerns is that we don't know how many ballots are printed. We don't know where they're mailed to. We really don't have any control over anything.
Getting a new building will require money the elections office doesn't have. Curtis has spent much of the campaign criticizing his opponent.
I worked with her for, it wasn't long.
Shortly after he started the job, Curtis fired Franciscat.
She has no concern for the public at all. She treats them as if they are the villain.
Franciscat says that's not true, but she does acknowledge the office has gotten a bad rap in the past. Franciscat says that sometimes her critics don't realize that the clerk's office hasn't been lockstep with the state legislature. They fought against the law that made vote-by-mail permanent for all California voters in 2022. She says lawmakers in Sacramento didn't understand that some rural voters prefer to vote in person, and mailing them a ballot only adds more complexity and wastes taxpayer money. Ballots will be mailed to voters by May 4th and must be returned to a drop box or postmark by June 2nd. Because there are only two candidates in the primary, the winner will be decided in June. For the California Report, I'm Roman Battaglia in Reading.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform.